When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
We do it every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. We power rank the power rankings. Four power rankings out there that come out on Tuesday morning that we subscribe to in this exercise, and we rank them based on how they assess the Houston Texans. SI.com, ESPN.com, The Athletic, and CBSSports.com. In no particular order did I just recite them. Now we're going to put them in a particular order as we take a look. They all just dropped these within the last hour or so. And I will say this, before we get to the rankings for the Texans in each of these, is that if you're looking to get excited about the Houston Texans, and I think there's plenty of reasons to be excited about the Houston Texans, still plenty of reasons to be concerned, but I think overall, more excited than concerned right now after they win last night, 7-4, a couple easy games coming up. In each of these rankings we're about to hit, Seth, other than one, which has the Bills third, all of these rankings have Detroit 1, Buffalo 2. The two best teams in football, according to these polls, are Detroit and Buffalo, who, granted, at home, not on the road, but still, you beat the Buffalo Bills in Week 5, and you probably should have beaten the Detroit. If you can just score a point in the second half of that Lions game, there's a good chance that you probably win that game, too.
Well, so, if you play the old if game, you know, if Nico Collins, if Will Anderson, if Kamari Lassiter out there. But, yeah, right. Realistically, objectively, yeah, you slugged it out with that team.
That's who, yeah, and my point is, like, that is, by definition, that's your ceiling. I mean, those are literally teams that you've either beaten or played toe-to-toe with. Again, at home, but still, like, you at least for the Lions, if you're going to meet them again, it'll be on a neutral field, you know?
So. They've shown the, right, and you know, you can go back to the Bills game and talk about the receivers Josh Allen had at the time, whatever. Like, yes, everybody deals with injuries. The upside in the ceiling is still there.
Yes.
That's the whole thing, and I think that's why people get frustrated. And the Cowboys are such a bad team that you can't take too much from destroying them 34-10 even. That's how bad they are.
Yeah.
So I get it. I get the guy myself still have big reservations. But Nico Collins also only played 30 snaps in that game. You know, I think Nico Collins made an impact and made a difference in the way they could operate, but they were still being very careful with Nico Collins. So we still haven't seen the full effect of hopefully him changing and making the offense better. Doesn't change a lot of the issues with the offensive line, but it makes it a lot easier to function.
I didn't realize it was that few of snaps. I mean, I noticed at the end of the game when they're closing things out, and you've got Robert Woods on one side and Xavier Hutchinson on the other, which, by the way, I'm all for. Like, Tank wasn't in there either. Totally cool with that. Like, take your guys that are injury-prone in a 17-point game and leave them on the bench. If you think you can steer this ship in just by handing it to Joe Mixon and dinking and dunking to these other guys and just play the clock, cool. Totally cool with it.
And realistically, too, when you think about the defensive performance, it was frustrating when the Cowboys scored 10 points. The one big turban play was the thing that really got gave the Cowboys any hint of a chance. The rest of the defensives, and that was when they were playing man. They rotated a single high coverage on that play. The bend but don't break strategy that they were using, people were getting really frustrated by. And yet you look up at it and, all right, the Cowboys scored 10 points. The Texans forced a bunch of turnovers. Eventually the pass rush grabbed hold without Will Anderson, without Kamari Lassiter out there on the field. I was A-okay with the defensive performance last night, especially with the way they played in the second half.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so let's get to the power rankings. We power rank the power rankings. And of these four, to me, a distant fourth right now. SI.com. What do they have against your Houston Texans? The Texans beat the Cowboys last night 34-10. They are down three spots in SI.com. Boy, what
they phoned it. They had this written before the game even
began. Now, that's a possibility. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a possibility, which is a big problem. You know, like, hey, man, like that's where you have two versions of the power rankings, one if the Texans win, one if the Texans lose. They're down three spots to 16, so they're barely in the upper half of teams, according to SI.com. Just to give you some context, the teams that they are around in the rankings, just ahead of them, Seattle 5-5, and the 6-5 Broncos are just ahead of the Texans, who themselves are just ahead of the Falcons, who got beat 38-6 this week, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are 4-6. Here's what they say about the Texans on SI.com. After Cooper Rush coughed up a fumble leading to a knockout blow defensive touchdown, this game stopped looking close. This is a, quote, win your clunker special for the Texans, but I have a very conservative position on them in the power rankings thanks to an inescapable feeling that I shouldn't trust them. C.J. Stroud has not hit triple digits on his passer rating since October 13th now. That was the game against the Patriots. Since October 20th, Stroud has thrown just 2 touchdowns to 3 interceptions.
Yeah, and I think that's the most telling is that, this is no secret. This offense is just not functioning like a Super Bowl caliber offense. You get it. You can't, and when you talk about, you shouldn't trust them. No, you shouldn't and you can't. Not when it comes to playing the good teams, especially if you have to do it on the road in the playoffs. So, and that's just the huge, huge question is, what can this team be? And it's all limited. It's all confined to, all right, can they get to a point on offense where CJ is playing the way we know he's capable of playing?
Yeah.
I've got vast reservations about the offensive line, but the addition of Nico Collins and getting a full game out of him next week, we should hopefully start to see some genuine progress.
Let's hope so. All right, power ranking the power rankings. We said SI.
And Bobby Slowick. I still have my questions about Bobby Slowick.
Hey,
I got to throw his name in just to keep people from accusing me of protecting him.
That's okay. We'll talk about Slowick later this hour. I want to ask you about Slowick and how he did last night, but we'll do that. We'll do that in just a little bit. So SI.com, a distant number 4. Disrespect, I say. 3 down to 16 from SI.com. Number 3, CBSSports.com, Pete Prisco. The Texans are up one big notch to 13th. This win over the Cowboys is not moving people. This is what Pete Prisco says. They seem to write things in the victory over the Cowboys on Monday night. Getting Nico Collins back is big for the offense.
Yeah,
so there you go.
It is, yeah. Pete's always very, very brief.
Very brief, yeah.
You know what? I'm mad at the Cowboys for being such a train wreck that they provided zero barometer for us as far as where the other than it was kind of confirmation that, like, all right, yeah, boy, this defense, they can take a punch, they fly around, they want to harm people physically, which is nice. It's a throwback to traditional values. Just, hey, let's get out there and try to hurt people, okay? And as long as D'Amico kind of chuckles in press conferences, nobody ever blames him for it.
No.
You know? That poor Guyton kid left the game after Jalen Petrie, a man 100 pounds lighter than himself, just came up and blasted him. Guyton coughs up the ball and then leaves the game. That is a violent bunch there on defense. I love him so much.
I do too, man. I love their vibe. All right, number 2, power ranking of the power rankings. ESPN.com, who have the Texans up one big notch from 13 to 12. And their category here is preseason hot seat, which I guess is it's about a player who's
maybe
on the hot seat.
They're following up on somebody who was on the hot seat in the preseason.
I guess so, maybe. And their preseason hot seat was Stephon Diggs. Current temperature of said hot seat, hot. And this is what DJ Bieniemy says. Diggs suffered a torn ACL in a contract year as the former Bills receiver is a free agent after the season. He averaged 62 receiving yards per game, the third lowest mark of his career. But he was still an effective number 2 option for C.J. Stroud by being tied for the team lead in touchdowns, 3, before he went down. He'll be age 31 and coming off an injury going into next season, so his market will be murky.
Yeah, they were looking back at the players they had nominated for the hot seat in their preseason rankings.
Okay.
So Stephon Diggs was who they had nominated. He'll be a free agent. I hadn't thought about that at all. You know, initially when he first got hurt, we thought, okay, well, hey, maybe the Texans get him at a discount next year. But I guess it's so far from my mind right now. Just these clear and present dangers that we've seen our offense face. And the biggest one being themselves.
Yes.
They are the clear and present danger that's right in front of them. I'm not worried about Stephon Diggs right now.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'd love to have him back at the right price, you know, and an ACL.
Well, everybody's been knocked upside the head in terms of thinking that it's as easy as just, oh, we're going to have 3,000-yard receivers because look at their names.
Yeah, that's true.
Not so simple,
no,
Bobby.
No. I could definitely see whatever money you'd earmark for Diggs, could definitely see them earmarking that also for help on the interior of the offensive line and dead money that you might need to eat to get out of some of the contracts on the offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a culture problem on that offensive line, man.
Agreed.
You've got the guy. Laremy Tunsil's been leading the league every other year in penalties for the NFL, not just for offensive linemen.
No.
There's a certain operate. There's like a lack of urgency in the way that they operate that really annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much sloppy stupidity that really annoys me. And there is that part of me that just feels like you just gotta try to salvage the young guys, but purge the coach, purge the veteran players. Like, get guys in there that actually want to play the way the defense plays.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. That's the weirdest part to me, is that offensive line existing in the same building that defense exists in, you know?
Right.
They're so culture heavy in that building, and the offensive line just...
It's just so, it's non-swarm like.
There's zero
swarm to that offensive line.
That's wild.
And I can't blame the young guys. I don't know what they'd be like in a different household.
That's fair. The number one power ranking of the power rankings, they did the exact same thing ESPN.com did. I just like their font better. They're up from 13 to 12 in the Athletic.com's power rankings, the Texans are. The category for the Athletic that they talk about for each team is the heat of the seat on the head coach. And the seat temperature check on the seat for D'Amico Ryans is cold. And I think that they are actually underselling it. I think it's ice cold. I think there is zero chance that D'Amico Ryans is in any danger of losing his job at all, period. Here's what they say. D'Amico Ryans is 17-11 in Houston after trouncing the Cowboys on Monday night. Former Ryans teammate J.J. Watt appeared on the Manning cast and said he wasn't surprised by Ryan's success. Quote, I knew he'd be a great head coach. We all did when we were playing together. Watt told the anecdote, Seth, about how he bought his house across the street from D'Amico because if it was a good enough spot for D'Amico to live in, it was good enough for me. D'Amico was the perfect person to take this city back to the place where they were proud of their football team. End quote. I was on our sister station up in Dallas yesterday on their midday show, and they asked me what was the moment where the Texans, where this thing felt like it flipped, where the direction and the trajectory changed for this franchise. And I said, January 29th, 2023, that was the day they hired. Or I think it's January 31st. Either way, late January, the day they hired D'Amico Ryans. That was the day that things flipped on its head here.
Against a lot of people's expectations.
Correct.
It was very, there were a lot of skepticism on all sides. People wondering if the Texans would take in a guy who had once sued them for unsafe working conditions. Why would D'Amico want to come here when he's got the chance to go to other places, all of that. It was just meant to be, Sean. That's what it is. Deeply, deeply spiritual.
You and destiny.
And superstition person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I am. Destiny in the universe.
That's right.
That's who I'm crediting.
That's right. We're getting a lot of text messages. Five hour energy fan line.
It's real quick as far as the D'Amico topic. I know there's skepticism over D'Amico's game management and everything else. Like, so much of that is hard to separate from the way the offense is operating right now. I give D'Amico 29 more passes than I give Bobby Slowick. Mm-hmm. But then the real question becomes, all right, throughout the course of the season, but then especially in the offseason, if it doesn't get fixed, like, how do you handle it? You're the head coach. The offense is not up to snuff. It is firmly and solely on you now to figure that out. But the game management stuff is just hard to separate from some of the disjointedness on offense.
Yep. Question on the text page, 5 Hour Energy fan line, 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Is it a concern that it seems to be easy for teams to get a mismatch on Aziz Alshire and the teams like the Chiefs, Ravens, and Steelers will heavily exploit that?
Yeah, you know what? I saw this last week, and I know people were upset about it. People were acting like Aziz Alshire was in man coverage like all over the field on Amon-Ra St. Brown last week.
Yeah.
And the key play at the end of the game, he was in zone. It happens, you know? There's going to be times, especially last night, they were playing zone a lot. They weren't blitzing as much as D'Amico has done in the past. And when they were blitzing, it wasn't always successful. I saw people acting like they weren't blitzing at all. I'm like, no, they're blitzing. They're just not getting home.
Yeah.
And they couldn't trust their guys in man coverage. So I don't worry about the linebackers. I think a lot of times when they're getting beat, or Jalen Petrie, when he got beat last week too, when people thought he was in zone on the one. I'm blanking on the – anyway. Those are going to happen. It's up to the pass rush to get there. And in the second quarter – the pass rush wasn't quite getting there. And Look, they tried to line up and play man with Okuda on CeeDee Lamb or on
on Turpin.
Turpin.
Yep.
And it did not work.
No.
Not at all. So they went back and they played conservatively. Eventually the pass rush took hold and you got some really good results out of it. I'm not worried about the linebackers. I'm worried about their lack of guys who can play man coverage when Kamari Lassiter isn't out there.
Okay.
They don't have options.
They don't. Look, Stingley followed CeeDee Lamb around a lot yesterday or last night. And then, like, for one play, CeeDee Lamb's lined up with Kadar Holman on the other side, and the Cowboys immediately get a 29-yard shot downfield. Like, okay, he doesn't have Stingley on in this play?
Yeah.
Know where we're going here.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, the fact that that should be a huge concern. The fact that the Texans, when Kamari Lassiter goes out, they are literally pulling guys off the street to play at CB2.
Yeah, they're getting their practice squad call-ups.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, like D'Angelo.
And in the slot.
D'Angelo Ross played 100% of the snaps against the Patriots and the Packers in week 6 and 7. He was waived 2 weeks later. Played 100% of the snaps in those two games.
So that's where. You know, when I'm watching last night, look, when you're playing a bunch of cover two, you're gonna concede some receptions. What I remember, they used to refer to it as the kill zone, and I'm guessing that somebody along the way told D'Amico not to refer to it as that.
Yeah.
So in cover two, there's soft spots. And you can choose to look at them as soft spots, or you could call it a kill zone, which means that, okay, there's a spot where there's going to be an opportunity for a reception. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy. Right? But as long as you've got a psychotic whack job coming up to hit him in the kidneys, then there's chances for turnovers.
Yes.
And we saw that. And that's when the offense is functioning well, like it was in the second half last night, you've got a really good pass rush that's forcing the quarterback to get the ball out quick. And guys can, when they're in zone, they can come up and make huge hits or make plays on the ball for turnovers. And that part of it worked. And I know it was frustrating in the first half, but a huge part of that was also that the one play where you're lined up in man, you got torched for a huge touchdown by Turpin.
That's right.
So I'm not worried about the linebackers. I'm worried about how few guys they have that can play man.
Yep, I would agree with that. The play that flipped this game, the play that finally made us allowed us to breathe last night, we'll relive that because it is a super unique play. And we're giving away Texans tickets in the next segment. So stay tuned, stick around. You'll get a chance to sit in the front row in the bullpen for Sunday's game against the Tennessee Titans. Hi, Payne and Pendergast. This was the play that turned the game last night. This was the one where we could finally breathe a little bit because the Texans took a 17-point lead in the second half, deep into the third. This might have been in the fourth quarter, actually. This was a play where Derek Barnett forced a fumble and then recovered a fumble that somebody else forced later on in the play.
Second and 6 for Dallas from their 40. Cooper Rush with Dowdle to his left. Bunch formation right after motion. Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Scoop, score, Derek Barnett.
Tyler Guyton, thank you very, very much.
Okay, Tyler Guyton, for those who don't know, Tyler Guyton is the rookie left tackle for the Dallas Cowboys who scooped up that fumble and then got into kind of a Titus Howard frame of mind and said, I'm going to go make a play
you know what? We might have to get some Mike McCarthy audio for tomorrow because I saw the quote. Mike McCarthy explained afterwards, no, we do not train our offensive linemen to try to run with the ball. When they recover a fumble, they're supposed to go down to the earth, where the earth is safer than Jalen Petrie flying in like a missile.
Dude.
Yeah,
Petrie. We got to give Petrie his love. And that scrum there, man, like Petrie's the one. Barnett started it and finished it, but that thing doesn't happen. That whole sequence doesn't happen without Petrie just doing what he was doing all night, which was reckless abandon.
Looking at that from a Cowboys perspective, too, that feels like a butt fumble type of moment where, you just can't even, you can't do anything right. You know, like, hey, look at that. Hey, strip sack, but hey, look at that. We recovered the fumble. Oh, no, we didn't. We fumbled it again. That's a rough one there. I feel just awful for him.
I do too.
It's just how awful that franchise
devastating
is.
Devastating
right
is a good word. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Hey, quick reminder, we're going to be giving away Texans tickets sometime in this segment, so stay tuned right here for a chance to win bullpen seats, front row in the bullpen at the end zone, along the end zone, along the north end zone for the Texans and the Titans on Sunday. Here was C.J. Stroud after last night's game on that Derek Barnett scoop and score.
He scared me. I don't know why he did that with the ball. Like, he could have just ran in, but, man, DB's a dog, bro. Like, when we got him last year, he showed his worth, and now he's just, you know, putting more on him. There's a lot of plays that guys don't see, but he's taking on, you know, those pulling guards and sending them back, making plays for his backers to be free. You know, I thought Mario played well, Daniil, Danico, like, that whole D-line, bro. But, you know, DB got some wheels, though. You know, I respect it for sure.
You know what? CJ talking about Derek Barnett taking on pulling guards.
Yeah.
I like that because in my mind I realize, okay, yeah, you know what? D'Amico probably does what a lot of coaches do, and I've heard him talk about it. I just don't know how exactly he does it. But you cup together the highlight reels and the teaching reels and we'll, like, highlight the good things that happen. And a lot of times it's cool in those moments when you're in the team meeting and the coach is showing the offense stuff that they might not normally see. And a lot of times it's the stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. That's cool. Like, it's the kind of stuff that D'Amico's good at, you know? Cause, like, taking on a pulling guard, you don't usually make the tackle yourself or anything, but it's huge. It makes the play. It causes the TFL for somebody else. That defensive line is starting to operate in a very veteran fashion, with a lot of that smaller stuff. But then when it comes to actually making plays at the quarterback and just getting your hand on the arm or on the ball, we've really started to see that pick up the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, we saw Danico Autry last week against Jared Goff, and we saw Derek Barnett. I think that's the cool thing about it too, Seth, is just think of the two names I just rattled off there. Neither of them are Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, who both have had tremendous seasons so far. But that you're getting it from Danico Autry, that you're getting it from Derek Barnett, a guy that, as CJ just pointed out, you know, you picked him up off the waiver wire last year from the Eagles, and he's been tremendous for you for a year
now. I'll tell you what, there was something. I love these new uniforms. I love all of them. There is something about the numbers that's a little bit hard to decipher sometimes. Last week especially, because he had dark numbers on a dark jersey.
Yeah.
Last night, they've got white numbers, but there's just still something a little bit hard to identify. And so I fall into that with Derek Barnett and Danico Autry. I've confused them a couple times.
95 and 96,
And I'm usually pointing out something positive that one of them did, but they're enough of the same size and everything, and they're, like, both more fluidly, athletically than you expect them to be. So apologies for misplacing some of the compliments I've given to one and not the other. I haven't like, criticized one of them inaccurately.
Do you like that combo they wore last night, the dark on dark right there?
I do really like it. I do just, I don't know. I thought it was just the colors last week, but there's something about the numbers where it's hard to, it's hard to read the numbers on TV.
Yeah, well, the font is weird on the numbers, too. It's not a conventional font. It's a lot of teams are using it. My big uniform takeaway from the first 11 games of the season so far, I don't think they should wear any that is mixing the jersey with a different color of pant. I like the full.
You like the monochrome.
The head to toe. Yeah, monochrome. Yeah. I like, of all the, like, the conventional white on white, the conventional deep steel blue, or whatever this blue is on deep steel.
No, yeah.
And then the color rush, the alternative uniforms are inherently that from head
right,
to toe.
Right, right. And no, yeah, that's one thing. With these, like, for whatever reason, that's just, I dropped out of fashion school. There's something about the design of these uniforms. They just look way better monochromatic than with the mix and match. But yeah. I love them, and I love the way they look. And honestly, like those, I mean, because it looks like they're out there in black uniforms.
Yeah.
It's that blue is so dark. But it's kind of like Petrie looks scary as hell out there in what looks like a black uniform. So it's just almost, and he's so much smaller than so many of the guys he's running around. And then he comes up and hits people. It looks like there's a scary little stealth missile out there.
Yes. Yeah, dude, they've got to be moving so much of the alternate, the H-Town blue gear.
Yeah.
And I'm talking even like the hats that have the logo, it's the Texans logo, but it's like outlined in the H-Town blue. You know, it's the darker blue hat. When Amy and I were at the Golden Nugget a couple weeks ago, you know, the Golden Nugget, when you go there, it's 80% Houston people. And I think I'm being conservative. Like, it's almost all Houston people at the Golden Nugget Casino. And we went there the weekend of the Jets game. You know, you and I did the Jets game on Thursday night. And then, so we had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, once we were done with the show on Friday, to ourselves, no game on Sunday. So Amy and I went to the Nugget. there was so much Texans H-Town Blue gear between the jerseys, like C.J. Stroud jerseys, Will Anderson jerseys, the hats and the pullovers. Like, it's at least there, because we go there quite a bit. It's for now, it's replaced Astros gear as the most prevalent Houston sports gear from what I've seen. In all in places, it should be fairly neutral. You know, it's not like I'm going to a Texans game saying, well, there sure is a lot of Texans gear here and not any Astros gear. That is a place that was just flush with all Astros stuff when you would go there, understandably, the last few years. And, man, there's a lot of Texan stuff there. And, man, is 95% of it the one that has the H-Town blue in it?
Yeah, and, like, I don't – that's why – and I've never once, like, getting into – people try to lure you into a debate about is Houston a football town or a baseball town? Because – yeah, look, I've been here long enough. It's gonna change, you know? Like, but when the Astros were at the peak of their dominance, and people would try to lure into you, cause like, look, we're the Texans flagship and everything. They're like, oh, you think Houston's a football town, do you? And I'd be like, no, I don't. Good, fine. You win this argument. But but eventually it'll change, you know? And then it'll change back again.
Yeah. And admittedly, look, it's football season and the Astros aren't playing right now. You know, nor were they playing 2 weeks ago when they, we're used to them playing in late October. They were not. So there's that. My overall point is these new uniforms are a massive merchandising success.
Oh, yeah. Now, they're awesome. The only thing, and I'm trying to figure out whether I'll get used to the numbers or if maybe – I know they can't – like, it's a long process to change uniforms, and you're only allowed to do it every so now and then. Could they change the fonts at least? You're allowed to tweak it, right? It's just the colors and all that other stuff.
The biggest change I would want to make would be – to see if you can get what are now the alternate uniforms to allow the league to let you use those more than just three times a year. You know, like,
read the room a little bit and kind of feel
so
for, like, okay.
Good. Yeah, those are such good uniforms that it's a shame that you only get to wear. And we're talking like the Color Rush blue with the H-Town blue in it and the Battle Red head to toe. Combined, you're only allowed to wear those for three games the whole year.
No, plus there is something, man, and it's not even superstition. It's more just positive association. There's something about if you have a huge victory in the regular season, maybe you beat a team that you haven't beaten in forever or whatever, it's a big moment. There's something about the attachment you get to that uniform that for the crowd and everything. I feel it just, it fuels you when you see it again. And, I would like that. Like, those uniforms pop back up in the playoffs. I like that.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. I don't know that they're allowed to wear them in the postseason, but that would be badass if they could.
Oh, I'm sure they're not.
Yeah, I'm sure that, yeah.
You have to, Sean, to have fun in the NFL, you got to be sure you have to file 9 petitions.
Yes.
You have to get Congress to clear it with a 70% majority.
Yep.
And then,
Yep. Hey, let's give away some Texans tickets. Whatever jersey you decide to wear this weekend, maybe you can be wearing it at the Texans game. It's a Texans ticket Tuesday giveaway. Call now, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a pair of seats in the bullpen for Sunday's game against the Titans. Be listening in the 5 o'clock hour for another shot during the drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's a Texans ticket Tuesday. Call now, 713-572-4610. Up next, what did we learn from last night's game? The biggest things that we take away and learn from last night's 34-10 win over the Cowboys, that is next. But first, we'll get to what we learned from last night's win in just a second. NFL.com has a piece up about that, the big things we learned from the Texans' win over the Cowboys. We'll get to that in just a minute. Big congrats to Jadon in Pearland on his way to the Texans and the Titans this Sunday. Noon kick. We're back to noon kicks. No more primetime games this season. Couple more national games, but they'll be in the afternoon on the 21st and the 25th of next month. Yeah.
What time is the Christmas game?
3:30.
That's perfect.
Which puts Beyonce on stage at about 5 o'clock or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is what this thing has become to a lot of people. I saw some screen grabs yesterday of people posting from ticket outlets that now have like secondary market apps and whatnot that now list this as Beyonce/ Christmas Day football game.
I wonder. We're gonna have to get on Game Time and check out the prices for that. I wish I had checked it before the Beyonce fail. Yeah,
they're up. I checked. So, they're up.
That's cool though. Maybe it'll be a distraction for the Ravens. Maybe the Ravens. You know, I don't know. You know, Beyonce has like a. Beyonce and Jay-Z have like a 10,000 acre spread up around Humble or wherever. I don't think they have one in Baltimore.
So
they're not. So it's a little bit more of a new thing to have Beyonce near your football game.
Football teams are made up of a bunch of young males. I think Beyonce is going to distract each team equally, I would say, along those lines.
What's Beyonce, though, in terms of, like, how do 22-year-olds feel about Beyonce compared to, you know, a guy that would have been, is it good? She's been around a while.
Yeah, she's been around a bit.
Yeah.
I would say
I don't know the way kids think about things anymore.
Like
zero clue. I have no idea what they're into, like what the age thresholds are on the average or anything.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a free for all, and I don't have a clue.
I don't know. So we'll get to things we learned in just a second. This was funny though. There was a reporter in D'Amico's press conference last night that it felt like was almost trying to get him fined. You know, to get him to talk about some of the...
Yeah, he wouldn't shut up about the penalties.
The controversial calls that were made. It started off with a question about the Laremy Tunsil call on the very first play of the game, the illegal man downfield. And he was trying to get D'Amico to call out the officials. Here's what it sounded like.
I'll let you call it in for me. Yeah, you take the fine.
Okay, so D'Amico's clearly not going to... With the next one, we have the actual question to go with it. So D'Amico's clearly, like, D'Amico's done this before. He is not going to talk about officiating. D'Amico's not going to burn money. He's not going to take out a lighter and burn 50 grand or whatever the fine is for criticizing referees.
And he's also not going to accurately call out Laremy Tunsil for committing an actual penalty that should have been called.
There's that, too. Yeah. But clearly he had the fine on his mind in that question. So then a few more questions get asked about various topics with this game, and it circles back around to this reporter, and I don't know who it is. I mean, if I were to see who it was, then I may say, oh, yeah, it's you. But I couldn't tell from their voice who it was. But he circles back around to this reporter, and he asks about the big hit that Petrie had that was called unnecessary roughness in the second half of this game.
I'm just, you know, what they call, I mean, what they, at the beginning of the year, shoulder, everything. The receiver made two steps, and all of a sudden, you know, you got more laundry on the field than you got in the locker room.
What he said. Jalen played physical, man. That's what we pride ourselves on defensively, playing physical. Jalen exhibited that. We had a lot of guys playing physical out there today.
I almost feel like that was some kind of mole that was in there. Like the league is behind right now on its quota for fines. And they're like, look, man, we need to send you to Arlington. And we're gonna send you to the head coach that had the more controversial calls go against them in this game. We need to make up at least 100 grand worth of fines that we're behind on right now.
It's D'Amico's not gonna, you know, take the bait. And I also think, look, go to that Jalen Petrie penalty as well. Yeah. I haven't sat down and really hyper analyzed it, but I saw a little bit of the discussion last night afterwards, and I know the rules official or the rules advisor said that he didn't think it should have been a penalty. I could see the argument that Petrie actually, because he left his feet, that he launched. But I didn't look closely enough to see whether he left his feet like on the follow through after the contact. Because that is what you do. When you hit something, it's basically like you're trying to jump into that person or up into, and if you hit him that hard and the guy gives on you, you're going to enter the, you're going to go off into the air afterwards
that
a little
happens.
Bit.
That happens. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, I didn't feel overly outraged by it. I was more just happy to see him put the hit on.
I was a little upset about it. Like, anytime it's just the shoulder, I know what you're saying, Seth, like, but it's just the shoulder, man.
No, because the problem is that so many times the defensive backs now will make a good, clean hit, and it gets ruled as a illegal contact with a helmet.
Yeah.
Like, that they hit, that they targeted the head and neck area. That's the part that's frustrating that that you feel should be more reviewable, and that because it's clear cut and you can see, and the guys that do it, the guys get punished for doing it exactly the correct way.
That's right.
Like, oh, you want me to just hit the midsection? Okay, you don't want me to leave my feet. I'm going to give the textbook legal hit And because I'm so good at it,
yep,
you're going to flag me for the very thing I'm not doing. Fine, whatever.
Yep, yep. Text message, Beyonce is hot, whatever age, guys. That's to the 5-hour.
Yeah, I don't know how old you are. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's why would you text that in? How does that help me based on my original question? I asked, do 22-year-old guys, is she still in their age bracket? Yes, I would agree that Beyonce is attractive. Those are my and many other people, but I'm 49 years old. I asked the question specifically about 22-year-olds.
He said whatever age. That's what he said. He said all ages, this guy is saying right now.
I don't know if that... Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's, you know, it's... as far as the Texans, what did we learn? It's okay. What did we learn from last night? Seth's seething right now. What did we learn from last night's game?
I was like, I asked this specifically, like, opinion-based. Yeah, I'm curious about the opinion and taste of one age bracket.
Yeah.
And you turn it into, okay, when Beyonce is 97, are 22-year-olds going to be attracted to her? Answer me that,
I don't
spokesperson
know.
For all mankind.
Dude, do we know what the technology is going to be doing when she's 97? There may be technology that has her looking like she's 35 at
That's
age 97.
Point.
We don't know.
They might have downloaded her brain into 29 million robots or something.
Yeah, it's a long ways away. Someone's saying that Dua Lipa is the big distraction for 22-year-olds.
I'm still learning who she is.
You're still learning who she is? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did we learn last night? NFL.com has a piece, and it's about both teams. The big things from the Texans' standpoint is, one, Texans' offense is still leaving points on the field. Yeah, they the first half of this game, it was, and even when they were up 14-0, Seth, like I jotted down, like the no-killer instinct portions of the game last night in the first half.
Yeah.
No points off of the stop of the fake punt. That was a big one for me because that felt like early desperation for Dallas, and that you didn't make them pay for the desperation. Hell, you handed them momentum. You threw an interception on fourth down. That, the long touchdown, which was the only way the Cowboys were going to score touchdowns in this game, was on gigantic chunk plays. Cooper Rush is not stringing 10 plays together. And then the last minute of the half was disheartening when you got the missed field goal, kind of a gift from Brandon Aubrey, and you go 3-and-out in 13 seconds and give the ball right back to the Cowboys.
I can remember, the frustrating thing has been watching the second half drive charts for the Texans, because they obviously weren't scoring touchdowns, but there were so many punts too. I can almost remember last week's coming out after halftime against the Lions. Tell me if I'm right or wrong, Sean. It was interception, punt, 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 missed field goal.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Those were the drives last week. And it was just like, yep, that's a second half Texans drive. So tell me, how much better does last night sound in the second half?
I'll read it to you. I've got it.
I was gonna read it to you.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Field goal, punt, punt, touchdown.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that much better.
when you consider the touchdown was on a short field because the Cowboys were going for it on fourth down no matter where they were on the field. You know,
there's a 35-yard touchdown drive at the end of a game that you already had well in hand.
Honestly, where we're at with this offense in the second half right now, I'll take it. It's progress.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
It's progress, but man, it felt like it was a slump buster, you know. Like, all right, let's get it. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah,
let's just whatever. I gotta get some stank on me. Here we go.
The other thing that Nick Shook of NFL.com has in here, things we learned last night. Will Anderson's presence was missed, and says by the end of the game, the numbers itself. And by the way, the numbers. The Texans did end up sacking Cooper Rush 5 times in this game. It felt like most of them came in the last 8 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
But early on in the contest, and I think he's right about this. I mean, it was shocking to see how often Cooper Rush had time to throw. They made the two – when Ferguson – Caleb Ferguson – is it Caleb Ferguson or whatever Ferguson's first name is, the tight end for the Cowboys. When he went out with the concussion, I was like, okay, well, this is good because he's a solid weapon for them. The other two tight ends that were in the game – for them, Schoonemaker, and then the dude with the two names, the span forward or whatever his name was. Like, they made those two guys look like Travis Kelce, the Texans did at times. Like, if I had a criticism of the defense, it would be that they gave up way too many like intermediate chain moving throws to the tight ends last night.
And I think some of that too is the That's what I worry about more. Somebody earlier asked if I worried about some of the disadvantageous matchups we see from the linebackers when they end up. Really, a lot of the times it's that they're playing zone and the linebacker is in the zone where the wide receiver was. Like, it's not like their man everywhere he goes matched up to wide receivers. It's like that's when they're in zone. No, I worry more about when they're playing zone. And yeah, they're not picking up the tight ends routes as quickly and as well as they should. The stuff that they should be expected to do, that's the stuff where they got to be a little bit more consistent on coming up and disrupting that stuff. Some of that comes back to the pass rush too. You're playing that much cover too. The pass rush is everything. You just got to create easy opportunities for the guys in coverage.
Schoonemaker and Jake Ferguson. I don't know where I got Caleb Ferguson from. Jake Ferguson. Once he went out, Schoonemaker and Span Ford, two household names, combined for 10 catches for 98 yards.
Even Turpin, Turpin is dangerous as a receiver. And he lines up and he's so fast, and you're like, well, I guess that's going to happen. I mean, Okuda just got called up. Yeah. No, Turpin's got a career high 267 yards receiving, including last night. He's a special teamer who gets to play wide receiver sometimes.
Yeah.
Some of the big plays when they try to line up and play man, and that includes when they try to put Jalen Petrie in the slot and play man, it doesn't go so hot. That's one of the weaknesses of this team when Kamari Lassiter is out, and we're well past the trade deadline. I mean, these are the guys you're going to play with. You desperately need Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter to be healthy in the playoffs.
I have to. It's non-negotiable. You can survive without Will Anderson. And again, the premise of this paragraph was the Texans really missed Will Anderson. And for big chunks of the game, they did. If you're trying to rush the passer at a super elite level, that's what Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson allow you to do. But you can survive with Danico Autry and Derek Barnett, Danielle Hunter. You know, if you've got the healthy corners, blitzing guys on occasion, you have to have Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley both entering the postseason this year. And you need them against the Chiefs and Ravens if you want to win those games too, I would say.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's, look, I think if you look at the Lions and you look at the depth of their roster, I think that's a team that looks like they've been doing the right thing for a year or two longer than the Texans.
Yes.
You know, like there's more stability there. You feel like they could withstand injuries a little bit better. The Texans are still at that point in their development where I think you've got a couple of two or three key guys, obviously, other than the quarterback, that are really vital if you want to ascend to a genuine Super Bowl contender. You absolutely need Nico Collins, you absolutely need Will Anderson, and you need both those cornerbacks out on the field.
Absolutely, yeah. That wouldn't be a bad list. The guys, like the totally indispensable guys on this team, because there's several of them on this team.
My biggest takeaway, I'm trying to pay attention to my emotions this morning, Sean, and I think that, like most people feel, it's hard to get too excited about a win over a team that's as bad as the Cowboys. It's hard to feel like, oh yeah, I really learned something about them. It was for me, I think, confirmation that, yeah, this team with the right pieces on the field, and if CJ can get back to performing the way we know he's capable of performing, I'm not excusing the offensive line and Bobby Slowick in that, you can see the upside.
Yes.
They've just got to take a few steps before they hit that real tough stretch of the schedule.
I would agree with that. Let's go out to Texas Star Grill Shop in the Loop. Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they're out. Hey, which Texas Star Grill Shop are you all at today?
We're out in the Woodlands, 25919 I-45 at the Texas Star Grill Shop, right here in the Woodlands, and it's a good scene, ain't it, John?
It's a big scene. It's like Christmas, man. It's big. It's one of the bigger stores. They've got all the grills here. It's awesome.
How we feeling? How we feeling today, boys? After last night, what's the feel? What's the vibe?
I'm trying to like temper the way that I feel, because I feel I'm being impacted a lot by the second half of the game, and like trying to come in with a lot of positivity, but then also recognize that, hey man, some of the issues still persist in different ways. So I don't know, we're going to find a balance. In fact, first question we're asking is just like, did you get what you came for in this one?
And my answer to that, spoiler alert, is going to be, it's complicated.
Okay. Very good.
It's complicated is how I would say my takeaway from last night is.